We're going to learn Daf Yud Zayin and Masechtas Ksubas. We're going to start from the second to bottom line on the bottom of Tes Zayin Amud Beis, because that's the beginning of the sugya. The Gemara says as follows: Tana Rabbanan, famous Gemara, Ketzad Meraktin Lifnei Hakala. So, how do you dance? That's the literal translation, but of course Rashi right away points out this is not, we're not going to talk about different dance moves over here. We're going to talk about what do we say when we're talking about the kala for the chosan's sake and for the kala's sake. So Beishamay Oimrim, Beishamay says, now we're at the top of Yud Zayin Abad Aleph, kala kamoshehi. We talk about the kala as she is, whatever her milas are, that's what we're going to talk about, and we're going to talk about them as they are, whatever they may be. Ubeisil Oimrim, Beisil says, no, kala no v'chasudo. We talk about every kala as if she has a special chut, Shel Chesed, as Rashi says, that everybody, that she is the most special girl that's out there. No matter whether she isn't, it's not relevant. We always talk about how great she is. Okay, so that's the basic machlekes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Amru lehem Beis Shammai the Beis Hillel. So now Beis Shammai says to Beis Hillel, Harei she'oisa chigeres. So if you have a girl who's missing a limb, oisum, or she's blind, oimrim lo, we're going to say, kalanov v'chasuda, she's the most fantastic girl, that she has everything about her. V'atayra amrim b'dvar sheka tirchak. The Torah says that you shouldn't tell a lie. So what are we talking about this girl as if she has all these awesome features when we know for a fact, I mean, it's very obvious that she doesn't. So amru lehem Beis Hillel l'Beis Shammai. So Beis Hillel's answer to Beis Shammai is like this. L'divreichem. According to you, even according to you that says you gotta say it as it is. Misha lokach mekach ro min ashuk. Somebody who buys something bad. He did a really bad deal. That he bought. But he owns it already. Should you tell him that it's great, or should you tell him that it's terrible? Now we're talking about where he's done the deal, no backsies, no traxies, where he's keeping the deal, and now he's got to live with his decision. So what should you tell him? Should you tell him he did a bad deal, or should you tell him that he has a great deal? Havayoymer, we would say, at this point, once he's made his decision and it's final, and this is what he should do. We should tell him, oh, he did a great deal. He's doing a good job. So, of course, you should always tell him good things and try to find nice things to say. Mikan Omru, and based on that fact that we always try to make a person feel good about themselves, Mikan Omru Chacham, and based on that, the Chachamim learn, Lo Oilom Sehei Daitoi Shel Odom Ureves Imabrios. A person should be together with everybody else. The way Rashi learns, that you should do as a person wants, and obviously what it means is you should tell people what they want to hear. If this is the compliment that they want to hear, then this is the thing that you should compliment them on. If they don't care about something, don't focus on the things that they don't care about. But focus on the thing, if you see that this is important to somebody, even, by the way, if it's not important to you, and even if it's not a big deal, but if this is important to that person, and this is the way he likes to present himself, then, Anachanami, your chiv is to build him up on that point. So therefore, Beis Hillel says as follows, when a person gets married, the most people want to believe that their kala is the best thing, is the best kala out there. So that's what you should do. You should tell them how great she is. Doesn't matter whether she's perfect or not, and whether she has all the midos in the world. That's not relevant. What's relevant is that this guy has to believe that she is the best thing out there, and that's what Beis Hillel says. Just lay it on and tell him how great she is, regardless of whether you might be exaggerating a little bit, but she has to have something, but whatever it is that she has, you build on that and you make it more. He also, when Rav Dimi came to Bavel, Omar, he said, Hachi Mashru Kame Kalosu B'marova. This is what they used to sing in front of the Kala in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, this is what they sing. Loikichal, Veloy, that she doesn't need mascara or eyeshadow, Veloy Srak, and she doesn't need blush, Veloy Pirchos, and you don't need to braid her hair, Veyalas Chain, and she still looks good. So we used to say that she doesn't even need enhancers. She's so good on her own that she looks good. She looks good. Again, same idea that we're saying, of course she looks so great. It's important for a chassan to believe that his kala is pretty. So we dance and we say how pretty she is. She doesn't even need makeup. She's great. This is also an idea. The idea here is that, again, you're just talking about how great she is, and this is something that we do for everybody. We don't start saying, for this girl it's like this, and for that girl it's like that. Everybody deserves the praise. Similarly, the Gemara says when they gave Rab Zeira smicha, right, for his learning, they also sang this same song, that he doesn't need any makeup, he doesn't need any mascara, he doesn't need any blush, because we don't need to braid his hair. The Yalas chen, and he still gives a chen. Now, obviously, this is as we call it. In the Gemara Lashon, we call this Dover Mushal, that we're borrowing the song out of context. But the point is that Rav Zeir was such a great person, he doesn't need the smicha, he doesn't need anything else, but he's already great in his own right. He doesn't need any enhancers in order to make him a great person. We see that this is, again, not just applicable to the context of a chasana, it's also applicable to people in their everyday life. Now the Gemara, once we're talking about the continuous key, Samcha Rabbana L'Ravami V'Ravasi. Also, when Ravami and Ravasi got Smicha Shor Le'Hachi, they sang as follows, what we're about to say. Kol Min Dein V'Kol Min Dein, like this guy and like that guy, both meaning referring specifically to Ravami and Ravasi. When we, Samchu, Lano, we want those type of people, those type of Rabbanon, to be the people we give smicha to. In other words, as we'll see in a second. But as what we see is, these are the type of guys I want, right? That's the biggest compliment. When a guy says, you're the type of guy that I want to do this. Once you say that, that means you become the perfect specimen. You become the thing, the best way that it can be done. So that's the biggest compliment in the world. As the song continued, we should not give smicha for our purposes, loimin sarmisin, which means, as Rashi translates, is the type of person who chops up the halacha, who doesn't know one way or another. He can't come out with a clear psak halacha. V'loimin sarmitin, and not somebody who's a smarto, is usually translated as a shmata. What it means is as follows: somebody who's not clear with what he's talking about. That either because he himself doesn't have a clear understanding, or he just can't give it over, whatever it is, that's not the type of person that we'd really rather give smicha to, because smicha is part of our mesira to be able to give over to the next generation. So we don't want somebody who doesn't really know everything in full depth. Rabbi Avua, similar, the Gemara just on the same note continues and says, ki have osami mesifta, when he would come back. Oh, sorry, I skipped a line. Va'amri law. And there are those people say, so far we said some people who chop up or they don't know the halacha all the way. The Amri law, and there are those that say the words were loy min chamisin, not from a fifth. Meaning that they only either know a fifth of the halacha or say over a fifth of the halacha. Once again, they're not clear in giving over, transmitting the halacha. Veloy min sar misin. And not from people who just don't know what they're talking about. So Rashi interestingly says over here, lo yisparesh, that he says I don't really have a real pshat. But in Sanhedrin, Rashi does explain a little bit that it means people who don't know what they're talking about. So we don't want to give smicha to people who don't know what they're talking about. When a person gets smicha, and remember, again, smicha is not what we're talking about today, where you read a certain book and if you can repeat over what that Shulchan Aruch says, then you become a smich, right? A musmuch. But rather, we're talking about the smicha in the times of the Gemara specifically, or maybe it applies today as well, but specifically in the times of the Gemara, the Messiah was only given over to those people who were considered the leaders of Klal Yisrael, who were in a position to give the Messiah over to the next generation. So obviously you don't want to be giving that title to people who aren't qualified to give over the Messiah. If they're only going to give over part or mixed up or confused halachas, that's not going to be helpful for the continuation of Klal Yisrael. So once again, if we sang a song that says, oh, you are the type of guy that we want to give smicha to, so that obviously is the biggest compliment, to say that you're the guy, you're the best at what you're doing, and that's why we're very happy with you. Okay. So the Gemara tells one other context. So far we've had a context of a chasana. We've had a context of smicha, which again is for all of Klal Yisrael. And Rav Avua himself, ki have also mi mesifta levei kesar, when he would leave yeshiva and he would come to the Caesar's house, because his family was related to was part of the government. Nafgan amhasa debei Kesar la'ape, that the maidservant of Kesar would come to greet him. Umashrin lei, and she would sing to him hachi. She would sing the following sentence. Rabba da'amo, you are the head of the nation. Umedavrana da'umsa, and you are the leader. So, as Rashi says, Nasi Bama, again, you are the leader in the sense that you're the appointed leader, and also you're the manig, that you take care of Klal Yisrael. So you aren't just somebody who is, you know, has a fancy title, but you also are somebody that takes care of it. Vaitzina dinahura, and your face shines, and as we have in other places in Shas, that the face shining is a way of telling that a person is learning properly, that his face shines. Baruch Messiah l'sholem, blessed is your, and this is the way Rashi over here learns, that Messiah comes from the word ma'asa, the word coming, like toshima, come and listen. So Messiah, blessed is your coming, l'shon, that you're coming in peace. So just so that you know, it's very interesting, some of the Mefarshim over here talk about the fact that why was the lady singing to him, and why was Rabbi Avuah talking to the ladies. Okay, so it's very interesting, but we see that, as the Mefarshim point out, that there's a few places in Shas that we see that the maidservants, that there were people, there were interactions with women of stature. And that's why it's mutter. And interesting, that also is a connection to the next Gemara. So the Gemara continues. Amru alava Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi. So Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi shahaya noitel bad shel hadas, that he used to take a strand of hadas, of myrtle, umarake lefnei hakala, and he would dance in front of the kala. So this was, he would take a fancy tree and he would dance in front of the kala, a special dance. Va'omer, and he would say kala nova chasuda, and he would say these words of Beis Hillel. So we see that that's what they actually used to do. Rashmu bar Rabbi Yitzchak, Miraket Atlas. So Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak, the way Rashi learns, would take three myrtle branches. I guess the myrtle branch was a sign of something that's very pretty. It smells good. So it's a pretty essence. So he would take three of them. And so it wasn't just, you know, there was a lot of symbolism that was involved in the dance in front of the kala. Amar Rav Zeira, Kamachsif Lon Saba. So Rav Zeira said that the Rabbanon, that this rabbi, I'm referring to himself, would embarrass himself in front of the kala. Meaning, he said this not as a negative, but as a positive, and he would say that I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make the chassan and kala happy, that I'm going to, even if it comes a matter of embarrassing myself, I could dance in front of a kala to make her happy. In fact, the Gemara takes it and says, Kinoch Nafshei, when Rav Zeira was nifter, Ifsik Amuda Denura, there was a pillar of fire that separated Bendidei Lekulei Alma between him and everybody else. In other words, he was on such a high madrega that the rest of the Hamaynam, the rest of the people, weren't even able to approach his mitut, to his bethbed. The Gemiri, and we learn, we have a Kabbalah, to like Ifsik Amuda Denura, we don't have this concurrence of a separation of a pillar of fire. The Elo Lechad Bedara, this only happens to one person in a generation, Oy Letre Bedara, maybe two. So we see that this was obviously a very, very special person, and the Gemara is interestingly saying that the reason why he was to this level, now obviously he was Rav Zeira in his own right, and he was a chosh of a rav, but the fact is that he took it to the next level. That he took, and that was enough to kind of put him beyond the scope of anybody else. He wasn't just a regular, ordinary person. Now he was somebody who, at his level, he was willing to put himself out for the sake of the chosin and kala. Yes. So Amar Rav Zeira, Ahanya le Shutse le Saba. So he said so now this is actually the part of the Gemara that makes it so Rashi says Shutse means that the fact that he danced with Hadasim, that's what made him special. The Amri law, but some people say Shituse the Saba, that it was the fact that he had a Shita about how he held himself by a Chasana, that is what made him, the fact that he did this consistently, that's what made him special. The Amri law, the what? No. The second one is the fact that he had a shito like this, and the third one is va'amri lo shitzei de saba, the fact that he acted a little kashoito. The third explanation is the fact that he acted crazy by the chasana. That's what made him special. That's what helped to make it special what he was doing. I flipped around the shitas because Rashi is actually printed out of order. So I went in the order the way Rashi translates the words, but it's actually Rashi's, the way it's written and printed in Rashi is Shtuse and Shitse are flipped around in the way it's printed in Rashi. So therefore I translated it backwards. But it is. The second pshat, Shtuse is the fact that he's like a shoito. And Shitse is the fact that he had a shito. Okay, fine. But either way, those are the explanations. It's just a question of, you know, getting them right in the order that the Gemara prints it. Okay, now, the Gemara tells another famous story. Rav Acha, Markev lo akasve, that Rav Acha used to put the kala herself on his shoulders, umaraket, and he would dance with the kala on his shoulders. So Amri le Rabbanon, so the Rabbanon said to Rav Acha, Anan ma'olam eved avi, what about us? Could we also do that? Could we also dance with the kala on our shoulders? Obviously it's a very important thing to make her feel good. So Amri lehu, he said to him, Idamin alaycha kemeshura, if she is to you considered like a beam, like a piece of wood, l'chai, then you could do it. Ve'iloi loi, but if not, not. So in other words, this is not just, it's not just a matter of the dance. The dance is not what's, it also has to be under the right circumstances. So for me, putting the kala on the shoulder had no impact on me whatsoever. It's no different than just carrying a heavy beam on my shoulder. So I could do that. There's no hirhur, there's nothing else, there's no other incentive. But if for you, you start talking, you're thinking about the fact that you have a girl on your shoulder, then no. Then it's not mutter for anybody else to do this. Amar Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonason, so Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani said, mutter lehistakel b'fnei kala kol shiva, that is okay, lehistakel actually means to steer. The way we translate is not just to look, it's also to just look and gaze intently. So it's mutter to look at her during the Sheva, during the whole seven days of Sheva Brachas. Kidei lechavava abala, in order for her to be special to her husband. So again, the concept is psychologically, if the husband sees that everybody is staring at his kala to see how pretty she is, so that makes him feel good that his kala is pretty. V'les hilchasa kavase, but we don't pass in that way. We shouldn't be busy staring at the kalas. That's not so appropriate. The Gemara is that we're really following Beis Hillel Shita, that we do whatever would enhance the chosin and the kala, but primarily we're focused on the chosin here, that to make them feel that they're special, that they got a good mekach. Yishabchena be'inov, you should tell him how great she is, and you should make him feel good. You should make him feel good. And that's essentially what we do.
Don't worry so much about your own.
Okay, now the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbana. Ma'avirin es hames milifnei hakala. So if the chasan and the kala get into an intersection where one of the both in the process, apparently there was a minig that they used to walk the kala to the chasana, so there was a big entourage that was going with her. So if they cross paths and only one group has to move forward and the other group has to, you know, wait by the red light, so which one gets the kadima? So the answer is the kala gets the kadima, the mace has to wait, the mace has to find another direction. Vizeh midlifnei melech yisro. But both of them, both the chosin and the kala, do get bounced in front of a king. For a king always has the right of way, and as we'll see why in a minute. However, Amru alav al grifas, they say about Agrifas that was a melech, Agrifas HaMelech, Sha'ovar milifnei kala, that he one time, his entourage was going, and they bumped into a kala's entourage that was moving, and they both needed to go through the same intersection. V'shabchu chachamim, and Agrifas HaMelech decided to turn his entourage into another direction, and the chachamim said that he did the right thing. So the Gemara says, Shabchu Michlal the Shaper of it. So if they're praising him, that means he did the right thing. But that's not so simple. When it comes to a king, we just learned 2 seconds ago that the king really is supposed to go first. V'amar Rav Ashi, and Rav Ashi himself teaches us, Afil Lamandi Amar Nasi Shemachal Al Kvoide Kvoide Machal, even according to Lamandi Amar, there's a machloikus whether a Nasi is considered on that level, whether or not it's the covet is about himself and whether he's able to be Moichal it or not. So we say there is one Shita that says that a Nasi as a leader of Klal Yisrael, is in fact able to be Meichel on his covet. And it's a whole Gemara, I think, in Kedushin. So Melech Shemochel Al Kvoidei Ein Kvoidei Mochel. However, by a king is not able to be Meichel on his covet. So a king always has to go first. So how was this a proper thing that Agrippas HaMelech did, that he held up for a kala? This is not appropriate for a king, to Amar Mar, because we learned, and why is it that a king comes first no matter what? Because it says that you should place Klal Yisrael as chiv to put upon themselves a king, if they have a king. So the fear of the king, the awesomeness of the king, has to come first. So therefore, because it's really technically a mitzvah on Klal Yisrael, it's not a din in the king. It's not like the king gets the covet and he gets to decide what to do with his own covet. Rather, the covet is coming from somebody else. It's Klal Yisrael's chiv. It's someone else's chiv to give him covet. So it's not in his power to decide whether or not he should get the covet, because it's not his covet to deal with. Like, for example, a parent, you have to do kibbutz of aim. So it's the parent's covet. So if the parent says, no, I don't mind. If the parent says, I don't mind, so then you don't have a chiyuv kibbutz of aim on that point, because the parent specifically says, it's my covet, and I get to decide whether or not you give me this covet or not. And if I decide it's not a covet for me, for you to put on my shoes, right, which is a basic halacha, you're supposed to malbish, one of the ways of covet is to be malbish your parents. If they decide, listen, I'd rather you didn't, then you have no chiyuv to do that. Whereas by a king, the king doesn't make these decisions. These decisions are really in the hands of the nation. So if so, we're back to our original question, which is, so how is it mutter for Agrippas HaMelech to put himself secondary to a kala? So the Gemara answers, Parashas Derochim Havoy. The situation over there wasn't just that they were like literally going one head to head. Really, there were two different ways you could go. They got to, so to speak, a fork in the road, which both lead in the same direction. One, so to speak, might have been more convenient. And Agrippas HaMelech saw that if he veers off to the side and goes through the side road, he can get to the same place. So it was okay for him to do it, because as Rashi says, the way he did it was in a way that was not obvious that he was taking a backseat, that he was letting someone else go first. He just channeled it in a different direction, got to the same place that he wanted to go, so therefore, it was mutter. Okay, now, talking about going to the chasana. So till now we've been talking about at the chasana, and now we're talking about your chiv to go to the chasana. Tana Rabbanon, mevatlin Talmud Torah, you leave the Beis Medrash, loitzoes hameis, to go to a levaya lachnasas kala, and for the sake of achnasas kala. Amru alav al Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Loi, right? They said about Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Loi, shayim mevatlin Talmud Torah loitzoes hameis lachnasas kala. So even though Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Loi was somebody who spent his time at the Beis Medrash, but he would leave the Beis Medrash when it was necessary for the sake of a levaya or the sake of a chasana. But what are we talking about over here? So what does this mean? Every single time there's a levaya, I mean, there's, unfortunately, Nebuch, there's a levaya every day, and Baruch Hashem, there's a chasana every day. So what? So every day you're going to run to a chasana, and you're going to run, you'll be busy with that all day. So he says, when do you have this chiyuv? That's talking about where the chasan or the mace, it doesn't have all his needs taken care of. But if he has everything that he needs, what it's considered, what's necessary for this particular situation, ain mevatel. So then you're not mevatel tayr. So again, you don't have to be busy every day, all day, taking care of these things, because there is a limit. However, now the Gemara interestingly says, v'kama kol tzarkei. But what is that limit? What do we consider the limit? Amar Rav Shmuel bar Ini, Mishmei de Rav. The Rav, it says in the name of Rav, Tresa Alfe Gavri, we're talking about 12,000 people, Vishisa Alfe Shufuri, this is by Levaya, and 6,000 people blowing shofar. So they used to have a minute that they used to blow, to play music by the Levaya, by a funeral. So the way we count this is 12,000 plus 6,000, so it's 18,000 people being involved in the Levaya. But some people say, Tresa Alfe Gavri, it's 12,000 people, Umeinai, Vishisa Alfe Shufuri, and of the 6,000 were blowing the shofar, so it's altogether 12, not 12 plus 6. In any event, it's quite a large number, so you can't say to yourself, oh, they have enough people, I'm not needed. It's a large number. Ula Omar, but we're going to see when this applies in a moment. Ula Omar, Ula says, Kegoin, Dechaitzi Gavri Me'avula Vaad Sichro. So he says that there is enough people that stretch all the way from the cemetery to the gate of the city. Because again, they didn't bury people in the city itself. The cemetery was in the outskirts, and it wasn't right outside, because for health reasons, you don't bury somebody like right outside the walls of the city. So they're buried, it's a little bit further out. So that was a large area. But in order to have a stretch of people from the cemetery to the city, it would take quite a lot, it would be a large number of people. But that's the number of people that is considered appropriate, a proper covid for somebody at their funeral. Rav Sheshes, v'itemi Rav Yochanan, they give a different version. They say, Netilasa kinesinasa, the way we take away a Talmud Chacham is the way he received the Torah in the first place. Manasinasa, so just like when we received the Torah, Beshishim Revuah was 600,000 people. Af Netilasa Beshishim Revuah, so too, when a person is Nifter, and we're talking about going to the Levaya, it also, the person should have in attendance 600,000 people, which is quite a lot. Bahani Mili. Now, all these numbers that we're talking about, which are quite a lot, we started with the general rule. The general rule is called Sarkai. And then we started defining what is called Sarkai, and we gave these really large numbers. But these really large numbers, Bahani Mili, Leman de Kari Vitani. This is only talking about somebody who, Kari is usually translated somebody who reads Sukkim, and Tani is somebody, as Rashi says, that he learned Mishnayos. Tani is referring to Mishnah, like Masnisa, that he learns Mishnayos. Now, on the top of Yud Zayin Amud Beis, the Gemara says, Avolaman de Masni, but these numbers for somebody who actually taught, who's a Rebbe, less le Shiura, there is no limit. There is no limit. So the numbers, when you're talking about somebody who's a Rebbe for Klal Yisrael, there is no number, you can't say that this is enough. Now, there are Mefarshim explain that by the fact that the Gemara is distinguishing between somebody who learned just for themselves versus a Rebbe, means that these numbers, again, some of the Mefarshim learn like this, that these numbers, and these large, very large numbers, are talking about somebody who is at least a Talmud Chacham, but somebody who is not a Talmud Chacham, so then these numbers don't necessarily apply to them at all, and Kol Tzarchai means whatever would be, so to speak, appropriate for that person. So that because of the fact that the Gemara is talking and distinguishing between somebody who learned for themselves versus a Rebbe, means all of this is at least you have to have a minimum of somebody who at least learned for themselves. But somebody who is not a Talmud Chacham, then even the minimum numbers that the Gemara talks about aren't applicable. Now, finally, the Gemara gets back to an explanation of the Mishnah. The Im Yesh Edim Shiyatza Behinuma. It says, remember, if the Mishnah was talking about, if we don't remember whether the Kala at the time of the Chasana was a Besula or not, and now it's at the time of either a divorce or the death of the husband that the Ksuba, we have to pay the Ksuba, we have to know whether or not she was a Besula. So the Mishnah said that, at least the first part of the Mishnah said that the way we're able to tell is she wore a Heinuma. Then, because that was something special that only a Besula at her Chasana would wear. So the Gemara says, "My Heinuma." What is a Heinuma? What is that referring to? So Surcha Bar Papa Mishmei Daziri Amar. So Surcha Bar Papa tells us it's Tanura Da'asa. It's like an oven made out of myrtle. So they used to have this big, they used to build up this big teepee of a reef of some sort. And the Kala would wear that. And again, they would only do that for a Besula, so that was an indication that she was a Besula.
They call it cannabis, she's wearing
it. She wore it as a hat.
It's not a chuppah.
No, it's not a chuppah. It doesn't stretch out so much. It's more built up high. It's like a top hat. Rav Yochanan Omar, Karisa Dimenamna Bokalsa. It's more of a handkerchief they used to wrap, like a turban, that they used to wrap around her head. But the thing was that it wouldn't only wrap around her head, it would go around her whole head, including over her face. It would go front to back. So it would go over her eyes. And Rashi says something very interesting. Rashi says that therefore, because this turban would go, this scarf or whatever it was, would go over her eyes were closed, and she would possibly fall asleep. Because if you're sitting there with your eyes closed the whole time, and that's why it's called hinuma, from the word tenuma, which means to fall asleep. So there, that's where, yeah, I know, how do you fall asleep by your own chasana? But you know what? If it's long enough, you can fall asleep. Anyway, the point is that this was a garment or a hat of some sort that you would only do special for a Besula, and therefore if somebody wore this by their Chasana, you would know that they are a Besula. But the Mishnah...
Okay,
Rabbi Yochanan ben Baraka Omer. So now the Gemara quotes the next part of the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Yochanan ben Baraka said that at a chasen by a basula, they used to give out these roasted kernels, sort of like candies. So Tana Yehuda Raya. So this idea, this notion of giving out these roasted kernels was something they did specifically in Yehuda and Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, whether or not they gave out the candies was an indication whether she was a basula. But in Bavel, by the fact that, in other words, the Gemara is asking this kasha, by the fact that Rabbi Yochanan ben Baraka had to go and tell his own story, made it sound like this was the simon. It was either this or nothing. This is what you had to do. So now you're telling me that it was a very specific thing, so we say that, okay, fine, maybe in your town this was very specific. But Bavel Mai, what would be the din in Bavel where we didn't necessarily do this, or was this in fact a simon in Bavel as well? So Rav says, Darduge de Mishcha Aresha de Rabbanon. They used to pour and shmear, the ladies used to pour oil, this scented oil, on the heads of the Rabbanon, either shmear it into their hair or on their forehead, whatever it was. But there was like a chves, like this special dance, I don't know if you want to call it, whatever, there was a special process that they used to do with the oil on the heads of the Rabbanon. Because the Rabbanon, as you can imagine, were not typically greasing up their hair. And all of a sudden, by the chasanas, the ladies were going around smearing oil on everybody's hair. This was something, as the Mefarshim say, this is something you're certainly going to remember. And if because it was and the oil, there's a lot of symbolism over here, which we're not going to go into, but the oil represents the Torah. So Amar Le Rav Papa La Abaye. So Rav Papa said to Abai, Mishcha de Chafifusa Ka'amar Mar. Are you telling me that they used to put oil that needed to be smeared? So smeared on their head. In other words, Rapapa was commenting on this, that he felt that it was inappropriate because the smearing oil in a hair is not something that, you know, maybe the fancy people did it, maybe even, I don't know, Chves, the bums did it or somebody. But why would you do this to the Rabbanon? It sounds like a funny process. Rapapa was not familiar with this process. So Amar Lei, so interesting, Abaya answered him, Yasma, are you a Yosom? Meaning this, you missed out on this. Loi Avdalacha Imach, Darduge de Mishcha Aresha de Rabbanon. Bishas Maiso, your mother didn't smear oil on the Rabbanon's heads by the Chasana. So again, this was something, I think the point that the Gemara is trying to say is that this was universal, I think, is a little bit of a strong word, but this was something that was common in not just a particular place or a city. This was done, and he's saying, well, you didn't have this by your chasana. So you had this by your chasana. Everybody had this by the chasana. You're like, you're making a big deal. You're, all of a sudden, you know, you're trying to stop something that's been going on for years. This is what they used to do, and therefore this was done. Ki ha dahu merabbanon. Like there was a particular rabbi, one of the rabbanon, da asik le lebrei Bei Rav Bar Ula, that he married his son off to the Bei Rav Bar Ula, meaning that Rav Bar Ula's son, Va'amrila Rav Bar Ula, or maybe Rav Bar Ula Yasik Le Lebrei Bei Ahumer Abonon, Rav Bar Ula's son married this guy. Okay, so anyway, by the chasana that Rav Bar Ula was there, Vidardig Mishcha Aresha de Rabonon, Vishas Maisa. So they did this by the chasana. They smeared the oil by the chasana. So we see that this was done. So this was a minig. This was an accepted minig. Again, it wasn't so much the negiyah aspect of it that was bothering him. It was more that the rabbanon should be walking around with oil in their hair. That to him, that seems, at least the pashut reading, the simple reading of the Gemara, seems that that was bothering Rav Papa. That why would they smear oil in their hair? So, okay, fine. So obviously this was something that was done, and obviously it was unique for a basula. So therefore it was a simin. If they did this by the chasana, it was a proof that the girl was a basula. So the Gemara asked, "Armalos amai?" So what did they do by the chasana of a almana if she wasn't a basula? And how would you know? So what was the difference? So Tani Rabbi Yosef, armalosa lesla kisni. So the Gemara Rabbi Yosef says that by an almana, by a basula, they wouldn't hand out again these roasted kernels or these candies. And Tosfos says that they were makbid. It wasn't just that they didn't, because you know somebody might come with candies in his pocket and start giving out. So he says no, actually they were very careful to Tosfos says that they would not give out candies. And then it became very obvious. You know, the kids would come running to the chasana. You know, they run up to the bima by the offer of waiting for the candies to be thrown, and nobody's throwing candies. So then it's like, okay, now it's very obvious that we're dealing with the situation over here, that she's an almona and not a besula, and that became the indication and the proof that she was not a besula. If it was something that they, you know, made a point of making, that she was not a besula. Okay. Now the Gemara changes gears over here. It's a little bit late, so we'll go through this. The Gemara changes gears. Now we're going to talk about the second half of the Mishnah, which talks about Rabbi Yeshua brings a halacha that if somebody comes over and says, this field used to belong to your father, and I bought it, and we believe it. And the concept is Pesha also Pesha Isser. Hitter. But the story over here is very interesting, that he comes and he talks about your father's field. So the Gemara asks very clearly, the listeni, why don't we say, Moide Rabbi Yeshua, that Rabbi Yeshua says, Ba'omer l'chaveiroi, that he says directly to his friend, Sada zu shalcha hoisa, that it used to belong to you, l'kachtia mimcha, and I bought it from you. Which theoretically should, again, the Gemara, at least in the Havamina, thinks that it would be the basically the same halacha. Just like I said, this field used to belong to your father, I guess technically I could talk about the same thing, and I could say, this field used to belong to you, you weren't being taiveyed from me, and I'm discussing it. I'm saying, you know, this used to belong to you, but I bought it from you. So what's the difference? And of course it would be a much bigger chiddush to be talking about your field versus talking about your father's inheritance field. So the Gemara answered, Mishom, the Kabbalah L'misni Sefer. Because you're right, just the straight out halacha would be the same, but the end of the Mishnah would not be the same. Because it says, Im yesh edim shehi shaloi, if there are edim that it belonged directly to him, and now after we already knew that it belonged to him, a guy says, oh, by the way, I walk into the market, I walk up to your face and say, it really now belongs to me, ain't an emon. You are not believed. Now, in order to understand the reason why it doesn't work, so it has to be that we're talking about the father's field versus his field. Because hey, chidami. Because what case are we talking about over here that would, again, we're looking for a distinction that if we're talking about his father's field versus his field. So what's the case? If the guy walking into you says, by the way, this used to be your field, and I've been living here for 3 years already, I'm Ilo Mehemin. So the Mishnah's halacha is he's not believed. But why wouldn't he believe? The person's able to be believed. He says, I have a chazaka. That's a classic chazaka. I've been there for 3 years. Why wouldn't he be believed? And if in fact he says, I've only been living here, let's just say the classic 2 years, so therefore he does not have a chazaka, pshit to the loy mehemin. Of course, I don't need a Mishnah today. This is a Bab Matzia issue. This is a Bab Vassar issue. This is very simple that we already know that he's not believed, doesn't have a chazaka without a shtar. Okay, so therefore it's not talking about your field, because with you, he would have to either have a chazaka or not have a chazaka. So the Gemara says, 1 second. Ihachi gabayov of nami. By the father also, the same rules would actually apply. If a guy comes over and says, it was your father's, but I bought it. And it would be, we'd need the same proof. If he was there already for the years, the amount of time that it takes for a chazaka, so of course he'd be believed he has a chazaka. V'deloy achlo, shnei chazaka, and again, if he wasn't there long enough, pshita deloy mehem, and then of course it'd be the same halacha, that he wouldn't be believed, because he doesn't have proof. He has no proof whatsoever. Just because a guy walks over to you and says, this is mine, his say-so is never enough. He needs proof to what he's saying. Okay, so now finally we're going to get to the Teretz. What's the difference between himself, a field that he owned himself, versus a field that his father owned? So Bishleim Agabayav, so the Gemara says like this, I'll explain. By the father, Bishkachas Lo, you will find that there is a distinction. And again, this is what the Gemara is looking for. Why we talked about the father's field versus his own field. The case is as follows. This person claims, yes, I do have a chazaka. I've been here for 3 years, but here's how it broke down. It broke down, two of the years, your father was still alive, while your father still owned the field. And 1 year, where it was already now after the Yerusha belonged to the son. Now again, so he has the full 3 years, but it was broken up in the sense of when the son was supposed to get involved. And the chiddush of the Gemara, the Mishnah is the Rav Huna, and it would be based on Rav Huna's halacha. The Amar Rav Huna ain machzikin benichsei katan afilu higdil, that we don't make a chazaka in the field of a katan, even if eventually, ultimately, he grows up. Meaning, because under normal circumstances, a little child doesn't know his father's business. So if he grew up seeing somebody else owns the field, So he wouldn't know. He wouldn't know that that field belonged to his father because he doesn't know his father's business. So even when he became a bar mitzvah or whatever gadol means, he went into business himself. By that point, he already has seen this field as in the hands of somebody else. So he would never think to make a mechah and say that this you should give this back to me. So therefore, if there's no opportunity for him to make a mechah, so then the concept of chazaka doesn't apply. And therefore, that's why we're talking about the father case, because that's why the chazaka doesn't work. So it's only based on whether he has a pesha or a pesha hitter. It's not based on the chazaka. So even though the guy has been there for 3 years, those 3 years are not a legitimate 3 years. On the one hand, they're 3 years, so he has the concept of chazaka, so he's comfortable making the statement. But on the other hand, it's not really considered proof because there was nobody opposed to him to make the mecha. Okay? So that becomes the chiddush of our Mishnah to say that even though he doesn't have the proper chazaka, but since he has a pesha also pesha hitter, we're going to believe him. So now the Gemara asks a technical question for Rav Huna Masnisin Osulash Minun. Why would Rav Huna give this teretz? If Rav Huna is saying that he's not believed when he was a katan, so if this becomes the case of our Mishnah, so then Rav Huna is just simply saying the same thing that our Mishnah is saying, and usually Namayro doesn't try to make a halacha out of something that's already beferish a Mishnah or the explanation of our Mishnah. So the Gemara answers, Iboy Seimer Rav Huna Diyuka Demasnis and Kamar and Chanami. Rav Huna is coming to just emphasize and point out what the Mishnah is trying to say, that without Rav Huna you might not have realized that that's the case. So Rav Huna is coming to expand and explain the Mishnah, not trying to invent a new halacha. That he's acknowledging that it is the Mishnah. V'ibay seima, or another explanation is a filu higdil kamash malon. The chiddush of Rav Huna is taking it one step further. It's like, okay, fine, I get it that if it happened that he was still a katan and the guy was there for 3 years while he was a katan, that doesn't work because he doesn't know anything. The chiddush is that the Rav Huna is taking it that, and that could be the case of our Mishnah. The case of Rav Huna could be that now he's a gadol and now he himself is in business and he knows what's going on. He got the father's Yerusha and he's handling the estate. So he knows what's going on. So you would think that he has a chiyuv to make a mechah because now he should technically know. Rav Huna says, no, he realistically is not going to know because he's so used to, it's so familiar with him that someone else was living there, he doesn't even realize that that was his kamash malon. Okay. Fine. So now the Gemara asks, So now we understand why the Mishnah was talking about the father. However, the Gemara asks, V'litznaya, why don't we bididei? What we could say that the case is actually talking about the guy himself. V'lukma, and say the same thing. K'gon she'achla shtayim b'fanav, v'acha sh'loi b'fanav. Instead of talking about 2 years under his father and 1 year under him, talk about also there's the guy's there for 3 years, but not a straight 3 years. For example, that he was there for 2 years while this guy, let's call him Reuven, was in town. And then Reuven wasn't in town for 1 year. So the third year happened when he wasn't around. Ukagoin, and what would be the case? Why isn't he around and why can't he make a mechah? Goin Shabarach, he ran away. He ran away and he wasn't around. He wasn't in town. So the Gemara says, 1 second. We have to be very careful what the case is because just because he's not around doesn't mean that that's a case where he could have made a mechah and therefore create a chazaka. So Baruch Machmas Mai. So why did he run away? Either Baruch Machmas Nefasha is, if he ran away because it's Sakonis Nefashos, if anybody knows where he is, he's going to get killed. So Pshita Deloy Mehemen. So then Anachanami, the guy, once again, doesn't have a chazaka because that year that he's away because he's in hiding is not considered a year that he could have made a mechah. Delay motzi machi, as the Gemara itself says, you can't make a mechah, and if you can't make a mechah, then it doesn't count as a chazaka. V'debarach machmas mamon, and if the reason why he's running away is just for convenience, he doesn't want to pay taxes, so then he really could be around. So yibayle le mechuyeh. He should have made a mechah. The kaimalon, mechah shalai b'fanav have a mechah. Because we learn, just because I'm not here literally, I don't have to be standing in your face. At least, this is a machlaikis, but one shita is, and this is the way we hold, that you don't have to be in the guy, you don't have to make the mechah directly to the person. Because we hold chavracha, chavra islay, that everybody, the message gets across. My friend tells his friend, and eventually he gets back to the original owner. He knows he has to watch and keep on to his star. So I don't have to be here. So therefore, that could be okay. All this is building up to the question. So why don't we say that we're talking about that it really, that he was there for 3 years, but one of the years I wasn't around. So if it's because I couldn't be around Sakonis Nefashos, so then it doesn't really have 3 years. And if it's because I could have made the mechah even though I'm not around, so once again, I could have made the mechah even though I'm not here. Ditnan, Shalish Arzo is l'chazoka. There are three different lands when it comes to making chazoka, whether a person's considered being around or local. Yehuda, Ve'ever HaYarden, Va'Galil. These are three different places. Yehuda, Ever HaYarden, and Galil. If this guy was located in Yehuda and his field is in Galil, or Galil Ve'echzek Be'Yehuda, or he is in Galil and his field is in Yehuda, and a Chazaka, that's not considered a Chazaka, Ache Imoy, Be'Medina, until they're both in the same country. Right? So you have to make a Mecha in the same country, in the same place where the message could get through. And the Gemara itself explains this Brisa, or this Mishnah. Va'avinabam, we explain this follows. Mikosover. Now, what do you hold in terms of whether they're considered one location or separate locations? Ikosover, Mecha, Shalai, Befan of Havim, Mecha. If you hold, I don't literally have to be in his face when I make the Mecha. Afilu Behuda Begalil. So then Yehuda and Galil, even though they're separate locations, it shouldn't really matter that the field is in one place and he's located in a separate place. I don't need to be face to face in order to make the Mecha. So the Ikosover, so the Mecha should work, even not there, and therefore a Chazaka should work, even if he's not local. And if you hold like the Shitas that say no, if I'm not literally in front of his face, it never works. So afilu Yehuda v'Yehuda nami loy. So then it should even be, if we're in the same locale, in the same general jurisdiction, they're in the same area, it shouldn't make a difference as long if I'm not literally in his face. So then it shouldn't, right? So what's the significance specifically of Yehuda and Galil? Well, in other words, what's the boundary line that we're talking about over here? That distance already makes a difference. A little distance, just not in front of him, doesn't make a difference. So finally, the Gemara says, "Amar Rava Abba Bar Mamo Loilum Kasavim Mechosh Loi Befan of Havim Mechol." Like we started out before, that even if he's not literally in front of my face, it's considered a mecho. That I don't have to talk to him. I don't have to tell him. I could tell my friends. However, so what's the difference between Yehuda Galil Umasnisin B'Shas Cherim Shanu? And the Mishnah is talking about an example where there is a no cross border, where messages, nobody's traveling from one location. The Cherem means there's like, one, they each put each other in Cherem, they're at war on the other sides of the Berlin Wall, so they're not getting the message through, and that's why it's not considered a Mecha. So, by the way, this is the answer to the question. The question was, why don't we talk about him and he's not here? In 2 years with him here, and 1 year he's not here. The answer to the question is, even though the Gemara never sort of gets back to it, is the answer is, because Mamanoshach, there's never a case. Either he can't get the message across because he ran away, because he's in Sakonis Nefasha, so then you never had your third year, you never had your Chazaka. And if he could get the message across, then he should have made the Mecha, so he could make a Chazaka. Okay, anyway, so the point is that the reason why we give Yehuda and Galil as just an example of a Cherem, that the reason why it's not a Mecha is because they can't get the message from one place to the other. Umayshna Yehuda v'Galil, so why does the Mishnah, if the point is we're just talking about where there's no cross-border transactions, so then why do we use Yehuda and Galil? We should just say Tanaka. Why do we use that example? So now, on the top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph, and we'll finish with this last line, the Stam Yehuda v'Galil b'shas kishas cherim damu, because the understanding is that was the general rule, that Yehuda and Galil were considered two separate locations, and there was no commerce between the two, and there was no travel between the two. So what happened in one location didn't necessarily go and transpire or get communicated to the other location. And Yehuda Galil was a perfect example that everybody understood and knew that that's the way it generally was. So Mamelo and Echarami, we were able to use that as an example, but everybody understood that the same would be true for any other location that had a common or similar type of situation. Anyway, so that's the Maskana of the Gemara. The Maskana of the Gemara is because there is no case that's really relevant over here. Mamanovshach. Either he couldn't get the Mecha across, so you don't have Chazaka, and then you're not believed if you claim that it was that you bought it, because you don't have a Chazaka. And if he could have made the Mecha, then he should have made the Mecha. And then the Chazaka is a good Chazaka. So you don't. So it's 2 years in front of him and 1 year not in front of him is not really relevant specifically to this Mishnah. But, again, just to repeat, but in the case of the father, that's the Chiddush. The case of the father is that it was 2 years with the father and 1 year with him. So now the Chiddush is that the guy was living there for the amount of time of Chazaka. So, but he doesn't really technically have a chazaka because the little kid didn't know that he was supposed to make a mecha. So if he has a pesha also pesha heter, so then we believe him. If he tells me the whole story, because the kid had no idea, and he comes and tells you, by the way, this belonged to your father, but now I have it, so we believe him, because he never had to say anything. But if he doesn't have if we have Aiden that it belonged to the father, we know. So it's not based on his story. He doesn't have a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitter anymore. So now, he doesn't have a Chazaka either. If he doesn't have a Chazaka, he's not going to be Neman without a Shtar. That's the Maskana of the Gemara. All right?